by nature. They deal in underhand spells and manipulations. The fact that you risked exposure to protect your friend, especially when you believed you would be killed as a result, proves you are not one of them. My breath came in shallow gasps as I realized that I might not die tonight. I put my head in my hands. "Now listen, Miss Howell. I've never seen another girl who could do what you've done, and I've searched for 4 years. I've never met another sorcerer who could burn and walk away unscathed. As I say, sorcerers control flame." He took the lit candle from the table and collected the fire into his palm, as he had done before. "But we cannot create it." Searched for 4 years. That was why he'd come to Brimthorn. Why he'd tested the girls. "What does this mean?" "That I will take you to London, if you're willing, to be commended by the Queen. You will become a royal sorcerer, and when you're ready, you will fight alongside us. You'll join my household, live and train there. Not to worry. There'll be 6 others your age, all young men, of course."
"Young men? What on earth would that be like? The only boy I'd ever known was Rook, and there would be so many of them."
"They are all gentlemen. One of them is your benefactor, Lord Blackwood. I know he'll be proud to meet an accomplished young lady from Brimthorn."
I would meet the Earl of Sorrowfell. Study with him. As an equal.
I nearly lay back onto the bed so that I could wake up from this dream.
Agrippa continued.
"I can teach you to use a stave to control the fire and to master the other elements."
"Control," I whispered. Was such a thing possible? For years I'd lived at the mercy of my power, praying it wouldn't come upon me at an inopportune moment. To think that I could be its master, and not the other way around. It all seemed too good to be believed. I would go to war with you. I wished I hadn't smashed that vial of medicine. My head felt several sizes too small.
Yes.
Though I'd never seen a familiar until today, I knew what happened to the villages they plundered. And the victims they left behind. I'd heard men tell horrific tales of families torn to pieces inside their homes, of entire towns burned to the ground. Hadn't I yearned to do something about it? My childhood games had been full of battling the ancients, of destroying them. Could those dreams come true? And as a sorcerer, I would belong in ways I'd never allowed myself to dream of before. I knew what life at Brimthorn would bring. Years of hunger and cold. Of teaching young girls how to do figures while my own life passed by in a blur. And one day I would be an old woman and still chained to the spot where my aunt had left me when I was a child. Now I had a chance to become something.
"Will you join us?" Agrippa asked.
"What about Rook? Great destiny or not, I wouldn't leave him behind." "Speak of the devil." There were voices in the hallway. I got to my feet, still unsteady. Agrippa held my arm to support me. Rook told the men who pursued him.
"I'll see her if she's awake. Nettie, where are you?"
"Rook, I'm in here," I cried. Agrippa banged on the door and called for it to be opened. A moment later, the constable entered, holding my friend by the shoulder. When released, Rook hurried toward me.
"Are you hurt?"
he said, taking my face in his hands. His blue eyes blazed with concern. He looked human again, like his old self. Mud smeared his face and had dried in his hair. "No, I'm a sorcerer. I didn't mean to laugh, but I couldn't help it. Rook's eyes widened.
You can't be, he said, gripping my arm. Are you sure? You seem less surprised than I was.
I laughed so hard, I began to hiccup. He let me lean against him until I stopped.
Well, after today, I doubt anything could surprise me again. A sorcerer, of all things.
He tilted my chin up and smiled.
I know it's mad to say, but it's true. And I think I'm going to London.
Rook's smile faded somewhat.
Then I suppose this'll be goodbye.
He took my hand and squeezed it.
I'm glad for you.
No, I have even better news. You're coming with me. I knew it was daring, but I turned to Agrippa.
He is, isn't he?
Agrippa looked as if he didn't know what to say. Rook turned me to face him again.
Nettie, you can't have me along. I don't belong in a sorcerer's world.
Miss Howe, Agrippa finally said. The situation's not as simple as you'd like.
He has to come with us. I couldn't believe I was speaking this way to a sorcerer. But if he wanted me to leave Rook behind, he might as well ask me to cut off my own arm.
Nettie, please don't,
Rook said. He sounded on the verge of anger. Do you want us to be separated? I grabbed his hand again.
If you don't care to stay with me any longer, say so.
I waited, half fearing the answer. Rook closed his eyes.
You know I'd hate to ever leave your side.
I breathed out in relief.
Then don't.
Agrippa cleared his throat.
London isn't a good place for the unclean, especially one with Rook's scars.
He gestured at Rook's shirt, ripped down the front from the battle. His wounds seemed even redder and angrier after the encounter.
Why?
I asked.
Because I know them well. Those are scars that Korozov gives his victims, and Korozov attacks London on a regular basis. Some believe that the unclean are bound to the ancients who mark them and call to them.
But if Korozov is already attacking the city, would Rook's presence make that much of a difference?
Well, Agrippa appeared stumped. No, but...
Master Agrippa,
I swallowed to keep my voice from breaking. Rook was not going to leave me. Not today, not ever.
I want to help you, but I can't do so without Rook. You must take us both, or none at all.
Agrippa studied me with interest. I raised my chin, hoping my expression was determined enough. Rook kept silent.
Very well, the sorcerer said at last. You'll have a place in my service. If that is what you want, Rook.
Rook bowed his head.
I can do all manner of work, sir. You won't be disappointed.
I'm sure I shan't. Well, Miss Howe?
There was nothing left for me here. Nothing left for us.
I'll come with you.
Agrippa smiled in satisfaction. Rook's hand found mine. We would go together. The next morning, the carriage pulled up to Brimthorn so I could collect my things. I shook hands with all five teachers and smiled at the youngest two. Margaret Pritchett and Jane Lawrence. We'd grown up together, though we weren't as close as I'd have liked. My friendship with an unclean made them keep their distance. I was walking away when a child's voice wailed,
"She can't leave! Let me go!"
Sarah broke through the lines and flung herself at me, sobbing. I knelt and caught her, hugging her tight. She cried on my shoulder as I stroked her hair.
"They say you'll never come back,"
she whimpered. "I will, someday." I thought of Colgrine's beatings, of his roving hands. I wouldn't let Sarah or the others remain at his mercy. I squeezed her and said, I swear it. Sarah let go reluctantly. Getting up, I walked to Colgrind for a few last words. He leaned on his birch cane, running his thumb along the handle lovingly. He'd find an excuse to use it on one of the girls before too long. He always did.
Have you forgotten something, Miss Howell?
Remember me by this. I grasped his cane and set it on fire. With a curse, he dropped it to the ground and stamped the flames out, breaking the blasted thing in two. I will be back, I stared into his eyes. So take care how you treat the children. Colgrind grunted as I turned and climbed into the carriage. Rook sat up in front with the coachman. We rumbled down the lane, waving. The girls raced after us, calling goodbye. I felt a pain in my chest as I watched them disappear. Much as I hated Brimthorn, it had been home and felt safe. Where I was going, nothing was certain, and everything was dangerous. Chapter 3. We travelled for 3 days and nights, barely stopping to rest. Agrippa sat with his stave in hand, always on alert for signs of ancients or familiars. Having discovered me, he seemed fearful that something catastrophic would occur. I watched the countryside roll by our window, excitement and nervousness mounting with every passing day. I'd never set foot in London before. What would it be like? Sometimes, for reassurance, I would tap on the roof of the carriage 3 times, wait, and smile when Rook knocked back in answer. Finally, it was the day of our arrival. I leaned out the window with a thrill of anticipation. As we neared the city proper, however, my excitement faded. I paled at the horror that lay before me. All about me were buildings half demolished, brick blackened by soot, and people living in the open streets. The sky was a metal grey, and the air tasted oily. Ragged, filthy men slept on doorsteps, and women and children huddled together for warmth. Young boys swept the road of horse manure. Little girls, dressed all in black, sat on street corners, selling strange wooden dolls. They cried, "Totems! Totems for sale! Korazoff! Vrelum! Morakorin! Protect yourself with the power of a totem!" "Is this truly London?" I whispered. Brimthorn had been oppressively gloomy, but not burned and ravaged.
"This is outside the warded territory," Agrippa sighed as he looked out the window. He didn't seem to like it any more than I.
The totem children noticed our elegant carriage and called to us, leaping up and down in excitement. One of the girls, a tiny blonde creature, ran toward us, calling, "Totems! Totems! Take one home!" The horses reared up and we jolted to a halt. There was a scream. I leaned out the window to discover the girl lying in the street. Agrippa grabbed my arm.
"Stay inside," he said.
As the child wailed in pain, an old man with the blackest skin I'd ever seen burst through the crowd, raced across the road, and fell beside her.
"My little Charlie,"
the man wept, wrapping her in a shockingly bright cloak of purple, orange, and red.
"My poor little girl."
"Shouldn't we do something?" I asked. Agrippa looked white and pinched with worry. He opened his door and leaned up to speak with the driver while I craned my neck out the window. The child's sobs tore at me. With a half-apologetic glance back at Agrippa, I climbed out of the carriage.
"Nettie, what are you doing?"
Rook said, sliding to the ground.
You can't just sit there. I knelt beside the girl. The child was in a dreadful state, covered in blood. Sickened, I turned to the old man. Sir, how may I help?
Oh, good miss, how kind you is. How ca-
The man's smile melted from his face. The large, glittering tears in his eyes seemed to dry at once. He dropped the girl and snatched my wrist, squeezing tight.
It can't be. Not you, he murmured. What's your name, girl?
He had been talking like a poor man of the streets. Now he sounded like a cultured gentleman.
Who on God's earth are you?
Let go, I said, struggling against him. Rook pulled me away and wrapped his arm around me protectively. I glanced at the child and gasped. All the blood had vanished. She opened her eyes and sat up.
Sorry, she said to the man. I'll let the charm wear off.
My fault, Charlie. I lost my train of thought.
The man swept the child into his arms again and nodded at me.
Thousand pardons. Mistook you for someone else.
But his gaze was too intent for it to be a simple case of mistaken identity. How do you know me? I asked, getting to my feet.
Magician. Agrippa strode forward, glaring. You are a thief and a swindler.
Magician. Instinctively, I wanted to wipe my wrist, to be rid of the memory of his touch. Rook tightened his grip on me.
Swindler? Ridiculous, the man said, backing away. And look, little Charlie's well. Sometimes all you need is a wish and a prayer. It's a miracle.
The magician searched for an avenue of escape.
You know the law, Agrippa said.
People watched and murmured.
Oh, you wouldn't harm an old conjurer, would you, sir? We're so very sorry for the disturbance. Here, have some flowers to make amends.
The magician snatched a bouquet of red roses from his sleeves.
A peace offering?
He released white doves from his breast pocket.
Call a constable!
Agrippa shouted.
Oh, very well. Suppose I'll go quietly.
At this, the man sneezed and vanished in a burst of fire and smoke. I put my hand over my mouth. The crowd gasped in amazement. Agrippa looked about, baffled, and then returned to me, signalling to get back into the coach.
Come, Miss Howe.
Rook jumped onto the driver's bench, and I climbed inside. We rode along while Agrippa seethed. I've never seen a magician before, I said, trying to calm him with conversation. Agrippa cleared his throat, mopping his forehead with a pocket square.
I know it must seem harsh, cornering an old man like that, he said. Apprehending a magician can be difficult alone. You never know what they'll do.
I kept silent. I knew that magicians had been royally pardoned for aiding Mary Willoughby, so long as they abided by the law. But they were all rogues and criminals. When I was a child, there was gossip that one of them had come through a nearby village, offering to tell fortunes. 3 days later, he took off with 6 chickens, 2 sets of good candlesticks, and the miller's daughter. Still, I'd never thought magicians to be as dangerous as Agrippa implied. Do you hate them, sir? I asked.
They're selfish, dangerous men. They would rather tinker with obscene parlour tricks than lift a finger to aid the crown in a time of war. Considering it was their magic that helped the ancients cross into our world, that attitude is even more intolerable.
His cheeks tinged pink. I decided not to mention how the magician had spoken to me, or that my appearance had stunned him. Truth be told, I preferred not to think about it myself. Surely it had been an attempt to trick me. Surely. We continued on to a broad, bustling avenue. The street was a sea of activity, waves of humanity cresting and breaking.
This is Halfpenny Row, Agrippa said,
pointing out the window.
the trade hub of unwarded London. Anything you've ever wanted, you can find here.
We passed women carrying baskets of loaves in their arms. People hauled trays of turtle, panes of glass, bags of flour. Voices called out wares of fruits and vegetables. Agrippa sighed in exasperation as our carriage came to another abrupt halt.
What on earth is the matter today?
He looked out the window for the source of trouble. He appeared to find it as, laughing merrily, he waved at someone. Curious, I leaned out to look for myself. A young man on horseback trotted up to us. He rode a beautiful bay, and he removed his top hat by way of greeting. Reaching down, he drew out something that hung in a sheaf by his side. He presented it with one hand to Agrippa, bowed at the waist, and then put away the stave and nodded. Here was another sorcerer. My stomach lurched as I gazed up at him. I hadn't expected to be so nervous.
"Now, you can't keep me away, Master Agrippa. You really cannot," he said. "There's £5 riding on my seeing her first."
The young man peered in the window and cocked an eyebrow.
"Is this the lady in question?"
This last was addressed to me.
"Mr. Julian Magnus of Kensington, at your service," he bowed, a bit awkward, as he was still astride the horse. After nearly losing his seat, he said, "You're the prophecy girl. I'll be sworn. What's your name?"
Magnus had thick, wavy auburn hair and bright grey eyes. He was broad-shouldered and, I admitted to myself, almost absurdly handsome. His mouth was set in a grin, and he seemed to believe us old friends, not strangers who'd only just met. "Henrietta Howell," I smiled in a way I hoped was friendly, but not too encouraging. I didn't know this young man, after all. Magnus laughed.
"Well, now that the pleasantries have been exchanged, we must make certain you're the prophecy. A demonstration of your power at once!"
He clapped his hands.
"Come along. Start burning. Nothing too grand. A small inferno will do.
Perhaps when we get home, I should take the start of the horses," I said. Magnus seemed to like that response. "What was your name again, sir?" He snorted.
"Sir, is it? I told you, Mr. Julian Magnus of Kensington, at your service."
Here he gave a bow again.
"To be commended by Her Majesty. You're from Yorkshire, aren't you?"
"Yes," I said. I had to force myself not to tuck a stray curl behind my ear. The force of Magnus's attention was disconcerting.
"Northern girls have the ice and chill about them. But now that you've come south, you can thaw out as fast as you like."
He kept smiling, as though this wasn't an insult. "I'm sure I don't need any thawing out, as you put it," I said, conscious of the edge in my voice. My irritation appeared to delight him.
"Cross with me, are you? That's the glorious thing about northerners. They're all Sturm und Drang."
"Oh, you have no idea," I muttered. Magnus laughed, reached through the window, and shook Agrippa's hand.
"Thank you, Master. It's like Christmas. She's the funniest girl I ever met."
Agrippa struggled to contain a smile.
"Mr. Magnus is one of my incumbents. The son of a magical family spends ages 14 to 16 living under the supervision of an established practitioner." "That would be our dear master here," Magnus said. "It's his duty to make sure we don't fail our great test before the Queen."
So I was to share a roof with Magnus. I prayed I wouldn't want to murder him every time we had breakfast.
"Allow me to escort you home," Magnus grinned as he rode alongside our carriage.
After a further 10 minutes, Agrippa pointed out the window.
"Here comes the ward."
There was nothing ahead but two men in crimson soldiers' uniforms standing in the center of the road. "What do you mean?" I asked.
"Wait a moment."
He knocked on the roof of the carriage, which rumbled to a halt.
The soldiers stood directly ahead of us, their hands out in a signal for us to stop. I thought them ordinary guards until they each unsheathed a sorcerer's stave. "We request entrance," Magnus called. There was no gate.
"Can't we just ride past them?"
"Wait," Agrippa said.
The guards bent down, touched their staves to the ground, and traced them slowly upward. Floating into the air, they moved toward each other, one from the left and one from the right. The men met in the center, drew their staves together, and dropped to the ground. They'd sketched an invisible square, about 10 feet long and 10 feet high. Satisfied, Agrippa knocked on the roof again, and the carriage lurched forward and through the square. I gasped. It felt as if some enormous pressure was squeezing the sides of my head. An instant later, and it was done.
"What was that?"
I asked, hands over my ears. "The ward is designed to keep the ancients from entering the area. Only sorcerer's staves can cut through the shield to create a brief entryway," Agrippa explained.
Magnus gestured to the streets before us.
"Welcome to London proper," he said with a flourish.
If the unwarded area had been hell, this was paradise itself. Wrought iron gates, bordered parks and gardens. The sweet scent of fresh bread and cinnamon wafted from a bakery, and we passed a coffee shop where laughter and conversation bubbled out the doors.
"This is wonderful."
I leaned from the window for a better look as elegant women passed by in an open-air barouche.
"The ancients have never attacked here."
"Not even Relum has set foot in the heart of London,"
pride tinged Agrippa's voice. I knew that sorcerers had the power to create a shield around themselves to block an attack, but I'd never dreamed of a ward like this.
"What about the area outside? Can't you shield them?"
"No," Agrippa cleared his throat and shifted uncomfortably. "The sorcerer's power forms the ward, and one of our members specifically designs it. Master Palehook assures us that we have stretched our ability to its limit."
"Over there," Magnus called, pointing to the front of a beautiful building,
"is the Theatre Royal. I should take you for a show sometime. Have you ever been to the theatre, Miss Howe? Do they get much Shakespeare up in Yorkshire?"
His smile was full of false innocence.
"No, but I can spot bad acting when it's right in front of me," I said.
Magnus laughed so hard, I feared he'd fall off his horse. We reached Agrippa's home in Hyde Park Corner as the last traces of daylight vanished. Magnus dismounted from his horse, and a servant came to take the reins. A footman in grey livery opened the carriage door. Agrippa climbed down, then helped me out. Brooke leaped down beside me, and together we gaped at the magnificent structure. We'd passed tall, elegant white townhouses on our way through Kensington. I'd assumed Agrippa lived somewhere similar, but this was no small residence. It was several stories of cream-coloured stone with a marble portico and fluted columns. Awed, I turned to speak to Rook, but he was walking away, following the footman.
"Rook, where are you going?" I said.
"Below stairs, miss. He's a servant. He can't enter through the front door."
The footman wore a pained expression.
"But..." I couldn't finish my thought.
Hadn't Agrippa said that he would take Rook into his home as a servant? There was just something about the way the footman studied Rook. The formality of the whole thing. Rook, for his part, didn't seem to care.
"Don't worry about me, Nettie."
He disappeared down a flight of stairs near the front of the house. Agrippa came up beside me.
"He'll be well treated. I promise."
I believed him. But it was more than that. Rook and I had never been so separate before. We were from different classes, yes. But at Brimthorn, it hadn't mattered. We'd played together, spoken to each other, and no one minded. Now Rook and I wouldn't be allowed to use the same door. Somehow, I felt alone, even with Agrippa and Magnus waiting. My heels clicked on the tile floor as another footman took my cloak and bonnet. I turned in a circle, unable to contain my astonishment. The hall was a work of art in itself, with a great staircase twisting up several floors. Here in the foyer, oil paintings of beautiful spring countryside hung on every wall, along with exotic collectibles such as elephant tusks, fans from the Orient, and a sword in a lacquered sheath. A girl could spend months simply exploring, I muttered.
I hope you'll make yourself at home, Agrippa said.
Could I ever really call a place this magnificent my home? The thought made me dizzy.
Now, before I take you to your room, perhaps you'd like to meet the rest of the household.
With Magnus behind us, we walked upstairs. Housemaids in starched aprons bustled by, curtsying when they saw us. I curtsied in return, until Agrippa whispered that I didn't need to. On the second floor, we walked down a long hall and came to a door at the very end. Agrippa tried the handle, but it was locked. A voice from within yelled,
"Go away! We're busy!"
"Open this door," Agrippa called.
Silence. The lock turned.
We walked inside and found two young gentlemen with their staves pointed toward the ceiling. One of them, a large red-haired boy, put out a hand to stop us.
"Careful, master!"
20 books floated in the air, hovering as if held by a current of strong wind. I watched the balancing act with interest.
"All right," the boy said with a nod. "Now!"
The books darted across the room, slamming into one another. I cried out as books began to rain from the sky. Magnus pulled me out of the way, but Agrippa was hit in the head and fell. The rest of the books collapsed to the earth.
"You could have killed him,"
the red-haired boy cried, rushing to Agrippa and helping him to his feet.
"I'm so sorry, sir. We never meant to hurt anyone. We did warn you, though, didn't we?"
His green eyes widened when he saw me standing beside Magnus.
"Oh, it's the girl!"
"The girl's here."
The other dueling book boy turned to stare at me as well. His hair was wavy and black.
"You idiot! You always kill the lady sorcerer!"
He hit the other fellow in the shoulder after Agrippa had got himself safely to the couch.
"Don't be fools," Magnus said, stepping forward. "The important thing is I saw her first, so I won the bet. Both of you, pay up." "That was £5 together," the dark-haired boy said.
"Each?"
"Liar."
Now they were all grappling, though they seemed to enjoy themselves. I pressed myself against the wall, taken aback. I came from a place where silence and order were strictly enforced. Waiting for them to stop, I looked about the room. Two more young men sat by the window. They played a game of chess and paid no mind whatsoever to anything around them. One was so small and slight he seemed on the verge of fading from existence. His hair was pale and almost colourless. The other, by contrast, had black hair and shoulders so broad they stretched the material of his jacket. The brief fight died. Sensing a cue, I stepped forward to introduce myself.
"How good to meet you. My name is Henrietta Howell," I said, extending my hand. I hoped I didn't sound too nervous.
"I'm Arthur. Arthur D."
The red-haired boy blushed as he respectfully bent his head over my hand, though he didn't kiss it.
"Sorry about the books,"
he whispered. And this, Magnus said, straightening the dark-haired boy, is Cavaliere Bartolomeo Cellini de Genoa. That's in Italy.
I know where Genoa is. Magnus liked to speak for his friends, which didn't surprise me. Cellini bowed with a flourish.
I speak very good English, he said in a dreadful accent. But my Italian is terrible, he added in a perfectly normal voice, which made me laugh. He winked at me.
I met the chess-playing fellows by the window as well. The small, pale one was Clarence Lamb, the large one, Isaac Wolfe. They seemed pleasant and polite, but immediately returned to their game, not the most social of creatures.
Where's George? Agrippa said, glancing about the room. I was expecting a full welcome.
Of course, Lord Blackwood. My heart sped up as I looked back at the door, waiting for his entrance. I smoothed and fluffed my skirt.
He went out, Cellini said. His lordship said he had important matters to attend to.
Cellini pursed his mouth and stuck his nose in the air. Magnus and Dee laughed. Agrippa frowned.
I asked everyone to be home this evening.
Oh, it's all right, I said, trying to hide my disappointment. I would meet him eventually, after all. And being an earl, he probably did have important matters.
Well, Agrippa said, it can wait until tomorrow. You look as if you could do with some rest, Miss Howell.
He eased up from the sofa. Good night, I said, curtsying to the gentleman. They bowed in return, Dee laughing a little. I suppose this was as strange to them as it was to me. Agrippa and I climbed the stairs to the third floor and made a right down a long hallway. Agrippa gestured to a door at the end.
This is the Rose Room. I trust you'll be comfortable.
He smiled, but his eyes kept nervously flickering toward the door.
I shall have a maid come up and assist you. Good night.
He bowed and left me to enter the room on my own. Agrippa had struck me as an old bachelor, so I was surprised to find a room with pale pink walls and a dusky rose bedspread. A mirrored vanity sat to one side of the room, laden with glass bottles of scents and oils, a silver-backed brush and an ivory comb. A china pitcher and bowl with delicate floral patterns waited on a table, along with a cut-glass vase of roses. The fire in the white marble hearth blazed. Having a fire laid only for me was such a luxury that I nearly began to cry. At Brimthorn, I'd gone to bed shivering more often than not.
I beg pardon, miss.
I turned to find a maid in a cap and apron. She opened the wardrobe and laid out a white cotton nightgown. I sat on the bed, not knowing what to do. How did one go about having a maid? Was I supposed to talk to her, or was that not allowed? I smiled at her, shy, and was grateful when she smiled back. Moments later, I lay beneath the pink silk coverlet and basked in the quiet of the room. Only a few nights before, I'd been in the attic, sharing a bed with Jane Lawrence. The teachers and children all slept together in one long dormitory, and there was never any peace, with everyone's wheezing and snoring. The silence here was almost disconcerting. But I'd never been this comfortable before in my life, and it had been such a long day. I closed my eyes, and sleep carried me away. The next day, I woke, firmly tangled in blankets. My neck was stiff and I groaned as I sat up. My hair hung in my face. How long had I been asleep? Someone pushed the bed's drapes aside. It was the maid from the previous night.
Good afternoon then, miss, she said, smiling. I blinked stupidly at her. Almost evening, really. Nice to see you awake. Not that you can't have a lie-in.
But Master did want you up soon. An hour more, and I'd have had to shake you myself. Wouldn't have liked to, of course, after the journey you've had. I think you should be allowed to sleep until next year. She couldn't have been more than 15, a girl with a heart-shaped face and strawberry blonde hair. I'm sorry, I croaked, rubbing my eyes. What's your name?
I'm Lily.
I'm to be your maid, till Master sees fit to hire a lady's maid. She never stopped beaming.
You're from Yorkshire, they say. Is it pleasant there?
Seems dangerous nowadays, but I always wanted to go. Course, can't just up and leave on holiday when you're in service, can you? And not when there's a war on, at any rate. Maybe one day it'll end, though I can't see how. Still, suppose it's not for me to wonder.
Master says I'm to have you cleaned and ready by 7:30.
My, but you're dark.
Not that it's bad. I think dark women look mysterious. But Miss Gwen's colours may not suit you. But we can try, nonetheless.
I'd never known a girl to talk so much.
Thank you, I said as Lily opened the wardrobe and pulled out several beautiful dresses, laying them on the bed beside me.
Are you certain Miss Gwen won't be irritated with my taking her gowns? Or her room, for that matter?
Lily startled. Miss Gwen was the master's daughter. She's been gone these last 4 years.
Oh, my hand flew to my mouth in embarrassment. Poor Agrippa.
I'm so sorry.
How did she die?
Scarlet fever. I never knew her, as I came to work here afterward. But all the servants loved her.
I hate to think of Master Agrippa disturbing this room for me.
I got out of the bed, feeling almost guilty for sleeping there.
No, it was no trouble. This room's turned down regular as clockwork, just as when she was alive.
Lily shook her head.
Anyway, I've hot water and lavender soap for your wash. Afterward, we'll dress you for the gentleman.
What gentleman?
Oh, it's quite an occasion.
The Imperator's coming, you know, along with another from the Order.
Master says they are to evaluate you.
Lily smiled and helped me prepare my toilette. She brought up tea and sandwiches, but I felt too nervous to eat. The Imperator was the bloody Prime Minister of English magic. What if I failed their test? What if I truly were no sorcerer? And if I disappointed them, what exactly would become of me?
Chapter 4 Lily helped me into a sky-blue dress, sat me before the vanity mirror, and arranged my hair.
Sorry if it's awful, miss. Haven't had much time for learning hair.
She pinned it up, but left two loose curling sections by my cheeks. With a final flourish, she sprayed a citrus eau de cologne and clapped her hands.
Oh, miss! Maybe the dress is no great colour for you, but you do look lovely.
The girl in the mirror couldn't be me. At Brimthorne, I'd dressed in a shapeless grey uniform that aged me by at least 10 years, but I'd never given great thought to my appearance. Now my shoulders were bare, and the sleeves belled out at my elbows so that my hands seemed small and dainty in the folds of cloth.
Lily, you're a miracle worker, I breathed, admiring the fit of the dress.
The maid blushed. I pulled my shoulders back and nodded at my reflection.
I think it's time.
Stomach lurching, I left the room and went down the stairs, praying I didn't trip over my skirt. Once on the second floor, I paused and clutched the banister. I was utterly lost. There were 10 doors, all closed. Which way was the bloody parlour? I looked up and down the hall. Perhaps I should just start wandering until I found someone. To my left, I heard voices. One of the doors was open a crack. Relieved, I went to it and was about to knock when I heard my name. I stopped and peered inside. The room seemed to be a small study with a desk and several bookshelves taking up much of the space. 2 gentlemen were discussing me before the fireplace.
One of them was Agrippa, with his back to me. He said,
I have no business ordering you about, George, especially as you're nearly commended. But when I ask you to receive someone, you will be home to do so. Is that understood?
The fellow who stood before Agrippa was a handsome sort, with a triangular face and black hair. Agrippa had called him George. Heavens, this was Lord Blackwood at last. He was so young. Colgrind and the teachers had spoken of Lord Blackwood with such reverence. My whole childhood, I'd been reminded how blessed I was to live under an earl's protection. And here I was, about to meet him. I gripped the doorknob, trying to steady my nerves, and was about to go in when Blackwood said,
All due respect, sir, there's no need to wait eagerly on a simple country girl. She will keep.
He sounded bored as he rested one elbow on the mantelpiece. I bit my tongue.
I never thought you were rude, fellow, Agrippa said in a huff. While you live here, you will be respectful of her position.
With a shrug, Blackwood continued.
I am sure she is intelligent and charming, just as you wrote to us. But I don't know what you think to do with her. Train her for commendation, obviously, Agrippa said. He sounded angry.
Blackwood shook his head. His expression was cold.
We'll do our best, but with her background, I doubt she'll be capable.
My face felt flaming hot. I had to dig my fingers into the palms of my hands, lest the fire come upon me suddenly. Agrippa said,
You had better keep these thoughts to yourself when you meet the young lady.
Taking the opportunity provided, I knocked and entered the room. Lord Blackwood casually looked me up and down, judging everything he saw, no doubt. Agrippa made the smallest, softest noise and glanced away. I winced, remembering that I was wearing his dead child's dress. Oh, God. Still, it wasn't as though I could take it off. Not now. Good evening, I said. My voice didn't waver. Excellent.
You must be Miss Howell, Blackwood sounded disinterested.
The bloody cheek of it all. I forced a smile onto my face. And you must be Lord Blackwood. A pleasure, I curtsied very prettily, if I may say so. How nice to finally meet my benefactor. I grew up at the Brimthorn School for Girls, you know, on Sorrowfell Lands.
Yes, I know where the school is.
He looked at me. His eyes were green and tilted up at the corners, almost like a cat's. I only mention it because I can't remember ever seeing you before. So many Brimthorn girls always wanted a glimpse of our benefactor. To think I had to come all the way to London to find you. My voice was bright, my smile easy. I wasn't going to let him see me rattled. Blackwood sniffed.
I'm sorry to have been absent. Sadly, only the most pressing matters can command my attention in wartime.
A spark glinted in my hand. I managed to quash it, but Blackwood noticed. Agrippa extended his arm to me.
Shall we go to the parlour? He said.
We walked out at a leisurely pace, Blackwood behind us. I clenched my jaw. The Earl of Sorrowfell was nothing like I'd hoped he would be. I doubt she'll be capable, Blackwood had said, as though it were already decided. My frayed nerves felt stretched to the breaking point when we entered the parlour to find the rest of the boys waiting. The hair on my neck prickled as I watched them appreciate my newly glamorous appearance. Cellini raised an eyebrow. Dee nudged Magnus, grinning. Agrippa guided me over to the sofa to meet the two gentlemen from the Order. One of them stood and introduced himself as Augustus Palehook, Master Warder of the City.
Aren't you a pretty sight, my dear?
He said, bending over my hand.
Such loveliness is a relief to tired old eyes. His voice was soft, but not gentle.
He turned to Agrippa.
And Cornelius. Always a pleasure. What a suit,
he said, eyes flickering over Agrippa's coat.
What a cravat. Is this Egyptian blue? You are always clever in your dress. As are you, of course,
Agrippa said, bowing. On the surface, Palehook didn't appear the intimidating sort. No one would cower before a thin fellow with receding red hair in battle. But the way Agrippa seemed uneasy around him, the way Palehook smiled as if he had garnered a point in some private game, indicated he wasn't a man to be trifled with. My head buzzed as Agrippa then turned and presented me to Horace Whitechurch, the Imperator himself. He did not rise, did not reach to kiss my hand. I'm not sure what I'd expected from the head of English magic. Some giant, perhaps, with the power of nature coursing through his veins. Instead, I found an elderly man with wet black eyes. I curtsied to him. He didn't smile.
"Shall we begin?" he said.
Impressing him was of the utmost importance. Palehook grasped my hand. His touch was soft and dry.
"Are you ready, my dear?"
"Yes," I said, though it was a lie.
"Come, then."
He led me to a circle of 7 stones arranged on the rug before the hearth. The stones were smooth and black, and each bore a different symbol. A dagger, a circle with a cross on top, a triangle, a curl of flame, an eye, rectangle, and a 5-pointed star. How strange to see these odd items lying on an oriental rug before a fireplace in a proper London home. Palehook gestured to the circle.
"Step inside."
My heartbeat quickening, I did as he asked. Agrippa knelt before the 2 sorcerers.
"Masters, I offer Henrietta Howell for evaluation, to receive instruction in our most learned arts, and to take up arms against the enemies of the Order and the Kingdom."
Whitechurch gestured for him to rise. They placed a bowl of water to my left and a plain brown rock to my right. Before me, they put 1 white feather. A candle was lit behind me. Once these preparations were done, they drew together and watched.
"Clear your mind," Agrippa said. "Make yourself a vessel for the magic."
My heart beat faster. What am I supposed to do?
"You do nothing. In a circle of the 7 stones, the elements will recognize a true sorcerer."
This was a baptism, a rite of passage every sorcerer boy went through when he was 6 months old. They all fell silent, and the ceremony began. Nothing happened. A full minute ticked by as they stared at me. Whitechurch coughed. Palehook narrowed his eyes. Even Agrippa began to twitch, oh so subtly. The boys frowned, whispered to one another. Magnus at least smiled at me. Blackwood, of course, wasn't watching. He stared into the fireplace. They would cast me out in another minute. I could picture Agrippa wincing, ringing for a carriage to take me back to Yorkshire. My hands began to prickle with heat. An image jumped into my mind, unbidden, the water rising in a ball. Agrippa had told me to leave my mind blank, but I focused on that image, clung to it. An instant later, the room gasped as one. I glimpsed the water out of the corner of my eye. It hovered in the air, a perfect round orb. I lost my concentration, and it splashed back into the bowl. Everyone murmured in excitement. This was what they wanted. I looked at the feather and imagined it lifting up, up into the air on a current of wind. My skirt rustled as a breeze swept through the room. The feather danced on the current. The boys applauded, even whooped with joy. My stomach turned. I knew that I wasn't doing this the way they'd wanted me to. My hands grew even hotter. I imagined the rock beside me leaping up and down three times. It did just that. The boys stomped their feet. Agrippa laughed. White Church even raised the corners of his mouth in a thin smile. Only Palehook did not rejoice. He watched me through lidded eyes, as though he was trying to decide on something. I knew they wanted something from the candle, but the fire under my skin demanded its own way. For the first time since I discovered my ability, I could use it without fear. I exploded into flame, a wash of warmth over my whole body. Everyone gasped. It felt glorious, but it was dangerous. Quickly, I tightened my control and the fire disappeared. The carpet was a bit singed, though. Magnus ran over and smothered the dying flames with his coat, laughing.
"You know how to put on a show, Miss Howe," he said with a wink when I helped him to his feet.
The boys cheered for me. I'd done it somehow.
"I should like to see one more thing," Palehook said, standing.
Everyone fell silent.
"Mr. Magnus, I should like to see her with a stave. A simple maneuver, of course. Merely have her split the rock in half."
Palehook reached into his pocket and pulled out a needle. Before I could ask, Magnus took the needle and pricked his finger so that a drop of blood welled on the tip. He reached for my face. "What are you doing?" I said, backing away.
"You haven't a stave of your own yet," Magnus said, his voice soothing. "It's all right."
I stilled and let him put his blood on my lips, though I flushed with the strangeness of it. He touched my forehead, tracing a few lines on my skin. Magnus handed me his stave. It was almost 2 feet long, with odd images decorating it. It wasn't as heavy as I'd thought it would be. I twirled it about a few times, entranced. Cradling it to my chest, I inspected the line of stars that someone had carved with great delicacy. Taking up the plain brown rock, Magnus held it toward me and said,
"Swing the stave in one fast arc, as though you're chopping wood. It should split the rock down the center."
I'd never swung an axe before, and at first I felt like I was trying to smack him with the stave and not doing an especially good job. I focused. I wouldn't fail when I was so close. When I next brought the stave up to swing, I pictured the rock shattering in my frustration. Magnus covered his eyes as the stone exploded into dusty fragments. There were gasps throughout the room, but a smattering of applause as well.
"It worked! Well, in a way," Magnus said, laughing while he dusted his hands. "You must have a great deal of power." He gave me a handkerchief to wipe off his blood. "Congratulations, Miss Howe."
"Congratulations indeed," Agrippa said, coming forward. His eyes seemed to glow. "I believe you have the makings of a true sorcerer."
The boys rushed in on me, gripping my hand and shaking my arm as if they'd wrench it free. Magnus caught me about the waist and whirled me in a circle.
"Julian, put that young lady down," Agrippa said, laughing.
Blackwood was the only one who didn't join the merriment. He watched me from the fireplace, his great green eyes narrowed. I turned from him, cool as could be. Let him glare. The Imperator stood and stepped forward. The room quieted.
"Yes," he said. His voice was almost a whisper.
He turned his watery eyes to Agrippa.
"Yes,"
he said again, with a nod. With that, he shuffled out the door and into the hall. I heard him collect his hat and coat
and call for his carriage. Agrippa said nothing.